CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Santiago de Cuba, a very large city in a very troubled country, Cuba. The party boss of Cuba, I learned from Mary Anastasia O'Grady, her new column. She is the America's editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal editorial page. The party boss is named Beatriz Johnson. And during a gathering, a protest of the policies of the regime, leading to starvation and without adequate resources and often without electricity, the party boss of Santiago, seeing this demonstration, went up on a rooftop to claim dialogue with the protesters. And later on, she went on television, Cuban television, to claim that the protesters of her regime weren't at odds with her. Mary, a very good evening to you. Beatriz Johnson has that good old-fashioned New York word, chutzpah. What is the protest that's driving this? Good evening to you, Mary.
Well, good evening, John. I think what's important to remember about these protests and the way they were handled by Cuba was a lot of this was PR. The regime had really gotten a black eye in July 2021 when protests about the shortage of food and medicine and dire circumstances on the island broke out. And the regime responded by beating people in the streets. Some people were shot at. And a lot of this was on video camera. So this time around, on March 1st, the regime had announced a giant package of reforms, which were basically increases in the price of food and fuel. And, you know, Cubans basically feel they're at the breaking point. They went to the streets to protest. But this time the regime was ready for them. And I think Beatriz Johnson's decision to go up on the roof and dialogue with the people in the street was an effort to say that this is a kinder, gentler military dictatorship. We listen to the people, we talk to the people, and we don't beat the people. And of course, along with that, they cut a lot of the internet and cell phone communications on the island, so there was less opportunity for the protesters to videotape what was going on.
There's no food security in Cuba, and the explanation from the regime and friends of the regime is that it's the U.S. embargo. Is that accurate, Mary?
It's not accurate, and again, I think that all of this is tied together because the regime really wants the, and I wouldn't even call it an embargo at this point because an embargo makes it sound like there's some kind of a blockade around the island, which of course is ridiculous. First of all, the regime buys a huge amount of food from the United States. We're a huge supplier of agricultural products. Secondly, they can buy almost anything they need from Mexico, from Spain. I mean, they can trade with the rest of the world. So there is no embargo per se on Cuba. There is a restriction on the use of U.S. banks and also the money laundering that the regime wants to do with money it gets from drug trafficking and human trafficking. But they're trying to get rid of these sanctions, these restrictions. And so they want to use this dire hunger on the island as a wedge against those in the United States who would argue in favor of sanctions. So they want to use this as an argument to say you have to lift the sanctions because they're starving Cuba. And what I was trying to explain in my column is that's really not the case at all. The sanctions basically limit them from borrowing money because they've defaulted on so many countries around the world. We're one of the only countries left that hasn't had to eat a default from Cuba, mostly because we've had these restrictions in place for 65 years. You know, the problems that are on the island are really generated by the dictatorship themselves.
We go back to Beatriz Johnson. Her claim was met with some colorful language, along with conga playing rhythms. However, the regime afterwards, Mary reports, went door to door in Santiago, El Cobre, and Bayamo to detain people who were implicated. What happened to them, Mary?
Well, we don't know. I mean, there are various stories on, there's a couple of independent news outlets that I use. Some of them have surreptitious activities of journalists on the island that report out to these groups who are basically have their operations in Spain or in Mexico or in Miami. And those organizations were reporting that there were people disappeared. And when I say disappeared, I don't mean, you know, shoved out of helicopters like we saw in the 20th century by military governments, but they take them and then you don't know where they are. Their families go to the police station. They're not allowed to see them, that sort of thing. And they may be detained for 10 days. They may be, you know, put before a trial. We don't have that much information about them yet, but there were people detained. And again, because the internet signals were cut, that reporting was limited. I did have some photographs of the police showing up at people's doors. You can bet that the people who were, you know, engaged in this kind of disrespect, as the Cuban government calls it, against the regime will suffer. They'll pay the price. They could be detained. They could lose their job. They could lose rations. Their children could be denied school. These are all the tools that the regime has used for many, many decades to discipline people.
Is the food insecurity used as a form of control? Is that why the on again, off again famine that keeps the population content?
Well, sure, it definitely is. There's no question about that. And as I noted in the column, when it looked like things were getting out of hand in Santiago, all of a sudden, trucks came in with rice and sugar and soap and, you know, staples. So they had the stuff. They were just parceling it out as they wanted to do. The other point that I made in the column is that, you know, Cuban farmers, and they are Cuban farmers, believe it or not, could be one source of food supplies for the island. But they're not allowed to market their products. They have to wait for the centralized government to come and pick them up and gather them, you know, like in the old Soviet system. And that method of collecting the harvest and so forth, as you can imagine, is not very efficient. So sometimes the crops rot in the fields. You know, as is obvious, I'm sure, to all our listeners, Cuba is surrounded by a sea of fish and other kinds of protein, and it's illegal for most Cubans to own a boat. And I once wrote a column about that. I think it was titled something like, Let My People Fish. but, you know, you could get a huge, people could feed themselves from the sea, maybe not the entire island, but, you know, certainly you could reduce the hardship if you would allow people to have boats. But of course, that would be too much freedom for this regime. So that's not allowed.
And today, Mary, is the regime more in control than ever before, or is it in some fashion shoddy?
I think it's losing control. I mean, I think the main problem in Cuba right now is that people who are inside, I mean, you need dissidents. You need a civilian population that is in rebellion, right? And you need outside pressure, which there's a lot of because it's so obvious what they're doing to the people. But the third leg of that stool that you need is you need someone from inside the palace, you know, kind of like a palace coup that says, you know, military people who say, you know what, these are our families. So we are not no longer going to stand for this. And I think in order for that to happen, those people need to see an option. They need to see a path. And they don't see a path, so they just stay where they are right now, and they continue to engage in the repression because they're rewarded for that. And, you know, they get the food and the other people don't get the food, so they stick with it. So they need to have an option. But in terms of ideology, you know, any belief in this, in the revolution, that's completely gone, completely gone. I mean, it's just a joke to think that, you know, the dictator Díaz-Canel goes out and talks about the revolution and everybody is just laughing up their sleeves at him.
Mary Anastasia O'Grady, the America's editor, the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm John Beck.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.